Hello, and welcome to The Potential State. My name is Dr. Sel Romanelli, and today I'm talking to Tal Shibi. Tal Shibi is an actor, dancer, choreographer, performer. He's a photographer. He's also a shiatsu practitioner. He's a mind-body therapist. He's a very, very talented person, and kind of he's what I would define a multi-potentialite, a person that has several interests, several passions, and they kind of integrate them. And obviously that's also how I see myself. We also call it a slasher, right? So I'm a therapist slash actor slash teacher slash educator slash conductor. And we talk about how does that come to be through my own personal story and kind of tips. If you hear this talk and you're like, wait, I'm a multi-potentialite, so how can you kind of bring that into the world? And then toward the end of the talk, we have this very interesting moment where he blocks my exits and he forces me to face a little bit of my shadow of labeling myself as an artist, seeing myself as a multidisciplinary artist. And I think this has relevance for all of us because we're all artists, because we're all in the image of God and God is the ultimate artist. So I hope you enjoyed this talk as much as I do. I hope you had some, you'll see there's some action insights both of us have as we go, a very fluid conversation, and enjoy.
You are listening to The Potential State Podcast with Dr. Asael Romanelli.
Okay. Welcome, everybody, to an exciting talk with my friend, Dr. Asael Romanelli. And he was a doctor before he was an official doctor. And that brings us to our topic. Asael, how are you doing today? Tell us where you're sitting and what your mood is.
So I am in Kfar Saba, which is a city kind of north of Tel Aviv in Israel. I'm sitting in my clinic. My mood is excited. I love you. I've known you for many years, but we haven't been really in touch. So it's kind of reacquainting, and I'm kind of excited because I don't really know where we're going to go with this conversation. I know we can go a lot of different places. And I'm good because this is actually a good day for, like, I'm happy to have this conversation.
Yeah, I am also super excited talking to you last time, seeing we have so many dots to connect. And something I love is threading the needle between all these different locations to see what new insights we can garner from the conversation. And I said you're a doctor, well, so that's a good way to start. We played, you could say, there's an improvisational game of expert, right? Who's the expert in the room? I think you might have taught me the game or the score, and we one up each other by being the expert. And I thought that was an awesome skill to battle certain doubts that I had in different areas of, you know what? I'm the expert here. I'll fake it till I make it. So as a guy who is, you used to send me that video on the multi-potentialite talk, and a guy who is definitely a generalist, but likes to go deep in a few areas. So what you would call a multi-potentialite, or you just said a slasher, artist slash educator slash therapist, or for you would be?
I'd say therapist slash artist slash educator. No, therapist slash educator slash artist. Yeah, that's my trio. That's my order.
Right. So on that journey, and I thought that you were groundbreaking in actually going for these things also when you didn't necessarily have all the credentials, but had definitely the experience and the creativity to go for it. I wanted to hear from you, what are some of the tools you use to jump in, to break through, to go for it, even when you didn't have the 100% knowledge about what you're doing, but you had the passion or the desire to go for it. And so, yeah, I mentioned playing the expert or using play, but I wonder what your take on it is.
So let's start with a little bit in the background. I think for me, I grew up as a regular kid. I wasn't really excelling at anything. My brother was a very good artist. He used to draw and paint and sculpt. And I was kind of ordinary. Like the word I used for myself is an ordinary kid. In that sense, and I kind of grew up in a house where there wasn't a lot of boundaries. I mean, my parents were doing their thing. You know, I grew up in a house with depression, so they were just trying to survive. So we were basically left to ourselves. And I think for me, my self-perception was I am regular. There's nothing extraordinary about me. You know, guitar at age 15, 16. But again, it wasn't, nothing I touched turned to gold. Like there was nothing that I was naturally inclined to. And I think after the army as well, like I didn't really know where I was going to go. And that kind of continued through backpack. I mean, working in New York City, I thought I was going to study acting and philosophy, but something didn't work for me there. And then I went to South America, and then it was time to go to university. And once again, I didn't have a clear passion. I never had like, I want to be a doctor. I want to be a lawyer. I want to be an actor. And I signed up for business and philosophy. And then the first 2 weeks there, you have 2 weeks, you can switch a major in the first 2 weeks. And I just happened to, it was like a week into this. I was like, what is this? Like economics, like that wasn't me. And I just switched to whatever I thought was the most interesting, which was people. And that was behavioral sciences. So it was sociology, anthropology, and psychology. And still at the time, I didn't really know what I wanted to be. My mom was a therapist, and I knew I didn't want to be a therapist because she was the therapist of the type that didn't like to keep saying, how are you feeling? How are you doing? And the gap between the way she was at work and what I felt at home was too much. And my dad was a civil servant. So, and I think what happened there is I just kind of did what everyone did. I did an undergrad kind of whatever, I'll study everything, kind of, I'll study that. And then on the side, I started taking improv classes, and I joined the dance troupe of the university for the first time. Why did I join the dance troupe? Again, I was never a dancer, but it was free. I got to meet girls and hot girls and dance, and it was a workout. And I've always wanted to study ballet, and it was like a fun amateur thing to do. And
did you have any resistance or pushback?
No, I mean, again,
environment, are people saying, really, dance, you?
First of all, it's like I don't know how to say that in English, like kudeam, like ethnic dancing, like folk dance. Yeah, so it's like with the flair, you know, the flair things, and you're like, la, la, la. And so it was the most awkward, not sexy, not cool dance, but I guess I didn't really care, because I think one of the perks of A, being a man, so I don't have, no one was ever looking at me, and B, an environment where nobody was really grilling me for good or for bad, I kind of just did it. And I was living in a different city. Nobody knew me there. And I just enjoyed the music and the physical expression. And I mean, I was embarrassed a little bit, but I was just doing it for fun. And then on the side, I started doing improv classes in college. And again, in both of those, I wasn't excelling at all. And in my last year there, I joined a community theater program in Be'er Sheva, which is a city down in the south. And the teacher came up to me, and then I was graduating that year for my undergrad. And because I'm competitive, I thought I wanted to be a psychologist. So I applied, and I was sure I was going to get in, and I didn't. That was the first time in my life where life was like, you're not good enough. And that kind of broke me. And then parallel to that, my community theater director, she's like, you should go study acting. You have a knack for that. I'm 28 years old. And I'm thinking to myself, now, one more thing I want to say in the background, my dad, who's an Italian Jew from Brooklyn, his dream was to go into show business. And when he graduated high school, he told his parents he wants to become an actor. And they were Italian immigrants who fled the Holocaust. They're like, no, go get an education. And for the rest of his life, art was a hobby. But he's 80 years old, and I know his biggest kvetch, his biggest regret is that he didn't go for it. Fast forward, I'm 28 years old. I'm in that same intersection. I'm graduating my undergrad. Should I go to acting class, to acting school? And my dad says, go for it. But there was a part of me that felt I wasn't good enough. And not in the self-deprecating. I knew I wasn't a star, and I didn't want enough to start waiting tables at age 29, you know, and like scraping odd jobs. And I decided to go to London. I didn't know what to do, so I stalled. So I took a year off, and I worked for the Jewish agency. I was a community worker in London with the Jewish community. And for me, that was a stall. That was like pausing life. Because for me at the time, I didn't know what I wanted to be. I got blocked doing a master's in clinical psychology. And for me at the time, education was the only way forward, because I grew up on college stories. I didn't grow up on army stories or on art stories, because my dad was an artist his whole life, but it was always on the side. It was always a hobby.
Right.
And basically London for 2.5 years was basically La La Land. I was a Jewish educator during the day, but I was single. I was bored. So I started going to drop in improv classes in London, downtown London, in dance, contact improv, theater, a little bit of music, singing. Like I was basically just sucking on the nipple of London, of the improv scene in London, because I had no personal life. I had no life. And I was basically during the day, I was in self-presentation. Is this interesting? Like, I just want to give how I got there. Is this okay? Or I'm not really answering.
Good. It's a good background. Yeah, don't worry. I'm tracking.
Oh, because this is the birth of the multi-potentialite. Like, how are we born, or how do we come out? And I'm wrapping up 2 years, and they offer me a third year, but then I'm realizing it's time to come back to reality, because in London it was a lateral move. It was La La Land. I wasn't anything. I was an educator. I was going to services. I slowly started incorporating art in my educational work, but I didn't see myself as an educator. It was clear to me that I wasn't going to go to rabbinical school. But I didn't really know. And I was really frustrated at the time, and I was scared coming back, because coming back to Israel meant, okay, what are you going to do when you grow up? And I remember my girlfriend at the time, her name was Keely. I said, listen, I'm not good at anything. I'm not good at anything. Like, I'm not an amazing educator. I'm not a really good dancer. I'm certainly not a good actor. And I'm like, oh. And she said to me at the time, wow, I haven't thought about this in a long time. She said, like, she didn't say multi-potential, but she said, like, you're good at different things, and things that people like you, what they create is to create something new. And at that time, I knew I wanted to work with people. I knew I wanted to be in the therapy world. I wasn't really sure how. And it was either psychodrama or social work. And I knew that if I go to psychodrama, I wouldn't feel like a psychologist or a drama guy. It wouldn't be enough. Right. So I said, I want to go old school. I want to go straight into social work, clinical social work. But still, I wasn't really sure. And I think what happened to me coming back to Israel, and that's where we met, Tal, was a very important intersection, because I came off from a 2.5 year La La Land. And by the way, I wanted to say, I think those 2 years in London changed my life, because nobody knew me in London. And I could really go to dance classes, and I started performing. I joined a theater company. I started performing for free, but like, I stepped out of the normal Asael, who's just kind of whatever, not artistic, not creative. I came back and I started studying clinical social work. I was working still as an educator, but then I decided to, and here comes to, like, I don't know if it's stupidity or big balls or what was it, but I came up to this dance school where I used to take classes. Like, listen, I want to teach improv. Let me teach improv to your dancers. And he was very, very generous. And he said to me, sure. And I was like, whoa, really? And he's like, yeah. And then he said to me the sentence, he said, how do you know you're a teacher? He said to me, when students come. And
that's what he said to you?
That's what he said to me.
Okay. So you improvised your way into teaching improvisation.
I who never went to a dance school, who never studied dance, I'm going to teach in a dance school. And I just, here's an interesting anecdote. So I land back from London. I pitched this to this teacher, Adishal, by the way, hashtag shout out to him. And then I say to my mom and to my best friend, and both of them are like, what? No. How can you teach? Like, it was very clear to me that the system was not ready for me to break. And I know that if I wouldn't have gone to London, to the other side of the world, I would have never had the balls to say to someone, let me teach in your dance class.
Right.
And what happened at that phase was really interesting, because that was my first imposter syndrome moment. I remember going into the dance school, Vertigo Dance School, downtown Jerusalem. And I'm seeing all these dancers with their, you know, their socks that go up and their tights, and they're all muscular and hot. And I'm like, okay, let's stand in two rows. I'm like, what the hell am I doing? And I start teaching, and it's wonderful. And because I have a day job as a Jewish educator, again, it's a hobby. I get paid, but it's peanuts. And I see that I'm kind of going in my dad's path, where art's on the side. And when you're doing a master's in social work, so I'm doing therapy, but you're a student. So again, it's all La La Land. And I guess this is the privilege of being middle class. I was never hungry for bread. I was never like, you know, I was paying my own bills. But like, because, you know, in Maslow's pyramid, like, when you're hungry for bread, you can't think about art or fulfillment or love or what is the meaning of life. So I was comfortably in the middle. And still, I was flipping hats. Like, I felt like when I was doing my Jewish education work, I was kind of like the learned Jew. And when I was clinic doing therapy, I was trying to be the introverted, deep therapist. And when I was teaching and performing, I was trying to be an extroverted king. And at the time, I decided I want to perform, specifically something that's called playback theater, which is improv based on people's stories, kind of a cousin of psychodrama, which is very popular in Israel. And I tried to get into this one company, the best company in Israel, that they require that you finish acting school. So I'm already faking it, teaching in a dance class, teaching in a dance school. And I had tried to audition for her, but she says, I'm sorry, you're not an actor. So I decide I'm going to take her out for coffee every time I'm in Tel Aviv. I'm going to basically hit on this 70-year-old woman, keep taking her out until one day that will come. And it took a year and a half later, she calls me. She's like, we have a show in Jerusalem tomorrow. Can you make it? We need an actor. I get into that company. And after 2 months, she says to me, Asael, I want to tell you something. Don't get insulted. The second someone says to you, don't get insulted, you know it's going to burn, right? She says to me, Asael, I don't think your calling is to be an actor. Your calling is to be a teacher. And then I graduate. I become a social worker. I'm still doing improv on the side. I'm teaching on the side. And I see, and in my, because I grew up with, my parents are not multi-potentialists. My parents are specialists. They do one thing. And I think what happened over the course of becoming a therapist and then finding myself being artistic director of a professional playback theater company, I found myself again and again in these situations getting paid for my art. And then I did The Artist's Way at Work, which is a Julia Cameron book. It's the sequel to The Artist's Way. And I remember doing an exercise about core beliefs about art and money. And my dad came up. And my dad's voice was like, art is a hobby. You can make money from it. And I remember when I started getting paid for my art, that was
a big... chapter seven. I think you came up to me one day. Chapter seven.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And somewhere in the middle there, me and you meet in what is the legendary, the infamous Loop Station Trio, which I'm sure you'll talk about in a second or not. And I have to say that even till today, like, even though I do dabble in all three worlds, and maybe we'll talk about the attempt to integrate them through the doctorate, but I feel like I never thought I was going to be a multi-potentialite. I was just enjoying lots of different things until I realized like that's what I want to do with my life. And the symptom for multi-potentialites is we always feel like we're the ugly duck wherever we are. We're not good enough in whatever field. I remember around therapists, I feel like I'm shallow and too extroverted. Around actors, I'm not extroverted enough. Around educators, I'm not learned enough. And there was a lot of this feeling like I'm not good enough. Like this, it's a combination of imposter syndrome and ugly duckling. And I remember training as a couple and family therapist, you do a lot of work behind a one-way mirror where people watch you work. And I used to get slammed every single week. Like, why are you talking so much? You're taking up too much space. It's too much about you. Why did you stand up? Why are you, you know, touching them on the shoulder? I think what gave me the strength was like, I just realized that it's not that. I put my head down until I finished each training. Like, I wasn't those people that said, screw this, you know, why do therapists? Like, I was like, envaya, I'm going to finish the training. I'll get the certificate and then I'm going to do whatever I want. And I think for a lot of multi-potentialites, what happens is either they don't have the means or they don't have the patience or the ass to sit down and graduate that process. And then what's left is this feeling of like, I don't know if it's like a little inferior complex, but like it's going to a little bit prevent them. And that's why I think I had a cousin who studied art in Amsterdam and he said, why? Because I want to have a license to be crazy. And he said, if you pee in the middle of the street, you get arrested. But if I'm an artist and I pee in the middle of the street, that's an artistic exhibition.
That's a good insight.
And
so I'm going to pause you there
and
connect a few of the dots. Because it's a lot of good material, and I like your free flow honesty and just sharing your experience in it all. It's really fun to hear the personal story there. And a few things that jumped out. One is that you said when you were dancing, you said, I didn't really care. I think that's an innate quality that you just had. You know, you were not self-conscious joining a kind of flocky, folky group. You thought it was humorous. So, I mean, I think by knowing you, I know you have a good sense of humor, that it likes to see what is conformity and then maybe dance on the edges of that. So that's dancing on the edges of conformity already. I think that was innate to your quality, probably to mine as well. Like, you didn't have to work for that. So you enjoy not caring.
Yeah.
So that's one thing I see as a playful tool. I mean, we can care or not care, but we can also just say, you know what? This has been embarrassing, but I don't really care.
Wait, I'll tell you why. Yeah. I just want to reflect. Thank you. This is really helpful for me because two things I think. One is because I was regular, I wasn't a star. I had glasses. I was a nerd as a kid. So it's not like I was the hot guy and I had this image of myself, you know.
Right.
It's like
you were coming in as the underdog.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I can definitely empathize with in the world of movement and dance, as I come from playing basketball in the park. So I also didn't really care.
Exactly.
Going into these workshops, like, I'm a guy who likes to play basketball. So all these people stretching in the mirror are for me just ridiculous anyway. So it was a sort of like a mechanism I could use.
Like a blissful ignorance. Like you're ignorant enough to not even care that this is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That these people trained, you know, from age 4 in this. And then I'm just like, oh, this is great. Easy movement. I know movement. And another thing I'm noticing that I can highlight through the story of the tension, unconscious tension that multipotentialites have, where there is a societal message. You said both my parents were specialists. There is an imprinting of specialization from our older generation where it's, hey, pick a lane and, you know, put your foot on the pedal. And then maybe you're starting a bit slow, but just accelerate until the end of the road. And at some point you're going to cruise there, but don't veer from this lane. And that's a huge imprinting from our elders, parents, society. Maybe not for everybody today, but I think that was our personal case where that does send a message that it's not safe to have three lanes and constantly be shifting between them or trying to integrate three lanes, because it's gone from safe capacity to unsafe capacity.
Right.
And so I had a thought for this, which is called embracing the owl. So if you tell me, it came up when you were talking. So if you tell me, you know, I tell you, hey, you know, at night I'm always awake and my head turns around and I make these noises and I disclose this to you. And then you say, you know what? I think you're an owl. And suddenly I'm like, oh my God, I'm an owl. This is fucking great. I start celebrating my owlness. Dancing at night, looking all around, and it's no longer an issue. And something around having that process of saying, hey, I don't know if I can be the extrovert on stage, then the sort of quiet introvert as I'm listening to people, then this third hat, the process between that and today, or last time we talked, you said, if I can share.
Yeah, please.
You said, now I'm trying to do this, or my intention or my attempt is, to actually have just one bigger hat, and I'm not a different Asael on the stage and then a totally different one in the therapy room. So that means, from my perspective, there is a healthy leakage now.
Yes.
Slow between these areas under one bigger hat.
And I'd say it's like an integration, and we call this a solid sense of self. Like, I used to be a reflected sense of self, like, how do people see me? And I'll be whatever you want, to suddenly say, okay, this is me. I'm tired, but I don't think I could, there's no hack for that. Like, I needed those years of flipping.
Sure.
To finally say, okay, screw this. This is the one hat, or there is no hat. This is me. And I think there's a quality of time as well.
Right. There's no hack, but there are definitely some sort of encouraging principles if you do notice that you have this non-specialized quality. Like this girl told you, hey, girlfriend at the time, you can integrate that. And I think that is a meaningful approach, because it's almost the difference between feeling adequate and inadequate.
Yeah.
Like, all right, not today, but in 7-8 years, you're going to integrate all these things.
Yeah.
You're a little bit of an actor dancer. You're not the worst. Maybe you're not the best, but you're definitely bringing some original quality to that. From my memory.
Yeah.
And then of course you have your qualities as a therapist that are very unique, and your qualities as an educator that are unique.
I mean, I think about it. Like, if we're talking to if there's a potentialite that's listening to us, or like a budding potentialite,
and we're trying to pump some empowerment into the...
So, like, I'm very mindful. The reason I called my institute the Potential State, I just want to say a word about that, because Potential State is from Donald Winnicott, who's a British psychoanalyst from like Freud's homie that then broke away from him. Basically said, when a baby's born, he's born into the fantastic world. He thinks everything revolves around him. The good enough mother, that's his term, frustrates him into reality. Okay. But in between reality and fantasy, there's the potential state. Okay, when my daughter plays with her dolls, she knows they're dolls, but she can also talk to them. She's one leg in reality, one leg in fantasy. That's where kids have imaginary friends, Santa Claus, the tooth fairy. Okay, as we grow older, we lose that potential state. We go more and more into reality. Mm-hmm. But within the potential state that we have imagination, creativity, flow, belief, wonder, love. Okay, and I realized early on that my gift is I can create potential states. I can bring potential spaces and bring people into that. And why am I saying all this? I don't even remember. What was the question?
Well, we were talking about, I was highlighting the integration piece. I was highlighting that you had an ex-girlfriend that told you, hey.
Ah, right. Oh, okay. So, right.
Integrate versus you walking around in the world thinking, I'm a bit inferior. I'm a bit inadequate. I'm not an expert.
I'm regular.
I'm
a regular guy.
Mo.
Exactly. And I think that was really what it was about, because I was surrounded by people. Like, my brother peaked early and he was very clear what he was good at. Okay. And I was like kind of just moseying around trying to find something interesting. And I never saw a talent in me. You know, you go to a high school, you're in your high school play, but everyone's in the high school, you know, like, and I think for the budding potentialite, I'd say this, if I had to like, I want to go back to potential state. So then what I realized is after I created the institute, which is basically me, and now it's me and my wife, it was like, I wanted to create a home for all the multi-potentialites because I never had a role model. I never saw someone like me. I could never look up to someone. I was lucky enough to have people that didn't block me. Do you understand the difference? Like, I had supervisors and teachers that saw me, that they weren't modeling for me, but they were like, you do you, Asel. And I can look
right. And a few people down the road that were saying, hey, come teach this class, or hey, I think you're an educator, or hey,
yeah,
some feedbacks about what you do seem to be good at.
And it's interesting because if I go back to Adi Shah, I've never actually thought about it. He was a fighter pilot,
right,
who ended up marrying his girlfriend, right. And he's like a dancer like you, like he played, he was a,
right.
And
right.
He, so he was also
and,
kind
and he took and he took some of that really healthy, straight-lined achievement type thinking to making with his partner one of the most successful dance companies.
Which is, by the way, named Vertigo, which is a pilot's thing.
Right.
As a pilot, you get vertigo, right? So,
right.
So if I go back to him, if he was a multi-potentialite, he sent the elevator back down to me. He's like, I see this in you. Here's an opportunity.
Right.
I've never actually thought about that. So shout out to Adishal. But like, absolutely. That's what I realized. And since I've done this, I've noticed when I do workshops and trainings, I attract to my trainings people like me. And yes. Just the other week, I was teaching improv for therapists in a university up north in Israel. And there was a woman there I could see from the, she was a multi-potentialite and she was struggling to find her way. And I was like, I see you. I get it. You're going to integrate this. Just like you said that, like, it's going to take you a couple of years,
right.
But don't give up. She has a background in singing and dad's like, don't give that. You got to keep that in.
Right.
And I think for a lot of multi-potentialites, we burn out because we think we need to be special. And then we specialize and then we're not happy. We're like, why? I'm a lawyer or I'm an educator. Or I'm a therapist. Like, why am I not happy? Why? Because there's a whole part of you that you're not bringing into life.
Right. And the integration piece also takes more time. I remember asking a friend once for some feedback and he really said this to me, I mean, which was true. He said, you know, you go for things, but you don't go all the way. Because he saw that I was a photographer, I studied photography. Then I felt too much in my head. I left, started doing shiatsu, I had good photos, loved it. I couldn't see a 15-year path of the time it was the beginning of dark rooms and beginning of digital. And so it would mean just being heavily, heavily immersed all day in that world. And I wanted then, I'm going to go to the body world. Doing shiatsu, therapy. You know, my version of doing a license for pissing in the street was going to the Jerusalem Academy of Music and Dance. To have a license for, I would say, for play more than for peeing in the street. But
and once you had that, how did that... How, did it, and how did it impact your freedom or your sense of multi-potential?
It definitely helped my, like, as you said, putting your head down and completing the task. It definitely propped up my self-esteem as, okay, I can play the societal game as well. It might be a bit challenging for me, but I also had people who helped me. I had a shorter program slightly, so it was more manageable for me. There was a teacher in the program that recognized me. Maybe she was also a multi-potential. I definitely saw me, said, all right, we'll help you get through this. And it definitely helped my ego become more healthy in the sense that I didn't feel anymore like an imposter. I felt, all right, I got the credentials. I have one leg. Maybe that's an adult potential state. I have one leg in society. Here you go. It's on the wall, like you have it on the wall. And then one leg in potentialite dreamland. But I also was joking within myself that, you know, no big offers were dropping onto me. Nobody was saying to me, oh, you are amazing. Come work for me. None of that happened. I was still in a sort of happy desert starting to figure out, okay, how can I now do my own workshops and teach this? So it was a very, it's a long, still is, continuing to grow and.
Well, the metaphor I give now, for that, sorry. Yeah. Go on. I was going to say that the metaphor I use is that of a pyramid. I heard Mati Kaspi, who's an Israeli singer and songwriter, he said, the wider the base, the higher the edge of the pyramid. And I think for multi-potentialites, we spend many years like this. And the challenge is, when do we flip it and start going like this? And I also think it depends which fields you're slashing. Because I think the art and education field is much less meritocracy. I don't know if the word's meritocracy. Like, you need less certificates to be an artist, right? Versus if you're a lawyer slash educator, or if you're a physician, like, it really depends which fields you're bringing in together. And I think for both of us, I mean, we straddle similar worlds, I think, me and you, although you have shiatsu and photography. But what I'm trying to say is, like, I felt like, for me, out of the three worlds, the one I needed the most certificates, and those are the ones on my wall, are the clinical ones. Sure. Nobody gave a shit if I was studied dancing or act. I mean, maybe these professional theater companies, but like, no one's ever asked me that question. But people do ask me, is, what's your certification as a therapist? Mm-hmm. And it's clear to me today that this license to be a therapist basically allows me to keep doing what I want to do, and it's considered therapeutic, right? Like, if I was a therapist and we were doing Loop Station, theoretically, that could have been a therapeutic performance, you know? Just like pissing in the street, right? So you're now sticking magnets on the wall. That's an art piece. So, I mean, I guess it really depends. And this is what I wanted to say, is, like, I'm realizing more and more. Like, I'm going to talk about the specific trio that I live in, therapy, art, and education. I truly believe that therapy, art, and education are the same. Okay, they all talk about change. They all talk about growth. And if we rewind, this is Brad Keeney who talks about this. The shaman, the prophet, they used to be all three. The shaman was an educator, a healer, a performer. It was all like, all these professions were once one, and we've kind of separated them, and we've right. kind of created these specific, we've over-specialized. Today, you're a doctor, you're a mouth and ear doctor, you're a mouth and ear doctor for children. It's like, you're a neurobiologist. Right. There's no holistic view anymore.
So it's almost the shaman split into these fragments, then remembered through individuals of saying, hey, this art therapy education is actually makes sense to me. And it's an awesome insight. I love that you brought it up, because it's an awesome insight as to, it's actually quite natural to feel that it's one thing.
Especially
using to think of it as totally three specialized categories.
But think about more of that. He said, Brad Keeney says, and this is not my original idea. He writes, he says, like, today, every Flutz who does an undergrad in social work is a therapist. And once, to become a therapist or an artist, you have to go through something. You have to experience mm-hmm. something. You have to work. You are the vehicle. And I feel like this over-specialization and turning everything into a certificate basically means that anyone can do anything, which on one hand is a beautiful idea. But I do believe that if you're going to walk people through a journey, you have to walk it yourself. And right. I I think for me, again, I guess unconsciously, I was downloading my parents's, my dad's art, my mom's, you know, therapy. My dad was a Jewish civil servant. No, I'm sure Jewish. Like, I got it. It got downloaded, but they never integrated it. And I think another interesting question for the multi-potentialite is, when is it like I have a day job and a hobby? And when is it I'm a multi-potentialite? Like, is it because I'm getting money from my art? Or is it because in my mind, my libido is split 50-50 or 30-30-30?
Okay. So let's unpack that. 30-30-30 versus?
Is it, how do you measure that you're a multi-potentialite? The fact that you enjoy a lot of things could be hobbies. You could be a lawyer who loves writing poetry and doing slam poetry. Does that mean you're a multi-potentialite? Does it matter? I don't know. That's a different question. But I think, I think for me, the measure would be like this. I would be doing art. Again, here's my blind spot. Because I've always been financially stable, not because of my parent. Like I was born into middle class. I am middle class. Okay. So I have to say that's my blind spot. So I could always afford to do, to teach, you know, improv at a dance school for like no money, you know, for minimum wage. I didn't care about the money. Mm-hmm. I think that if I was stressed for money, I would have never become a multi-potentialite.
Right.
Because well, I wouldn't have
the idea of the lawyer going to slam poetry. The question, does it matter, is also good. I mean, of course, does he turn slam poetry into an earning profession if he's already set from his lawyer gig? Does he need to have income? You know, that sometimes just feeds the ego. It's definitely good to actualize our talents into streams of income. But of course, that might not be the marker.
Right.
The passion, I think, is
exactly.
It's
the fulfillment.
Is in there somewhere.
Right. Am I bringing all my sides? We call this self states in psychotherapy. Am I bringing all my self states to life? Is Asiel the child, the lover, the angry, the adult? How many dimensions of myself am I bringing on the day to day? And I have to share that since COVID, for instance, I've been performing and teaching much less. Like the art has dropped in my life and therapy has gone way up. Okay. Right. So workshops. So out of the three for the past year and a half, and I can feel its toll on my body, on my sense of play, on my silliness. I'm off balance for me. I'm not used to doing so many hours of clinical work.
Right.
And I'm realizing this is connected to my physical and mental health. This is not just, you know, I have to draw. This is like, if I don't do a lot of art, I get more depressed. I kind of drop into, I wouldn't say clinical depression, but I'm definitely on the darker range on the emotional sphere.
Sure.
And I'm realizing, and it's interesting because I've never said, I mean, I'll say in my bio, I'm a multi-potentialite, but it's not my business card in that sense. I'll say I'm a therapist. I start with a therapist now because I feel like I tried that for a while and people didn't get that. And I didn't have the energy to start educating them. I didn't want to. It wasn't my calling.
The terminology is confusing anyway. I mean, I could say, hey, I think you're a multidisciplinary artist. Does that mean a lot of things for a lot of people? Maybe for if you're inside that little niche club, it might mean something to you.
And but this is interesting. But maybe we
throw it around because it sounds good.
But here's the thing. I know that if I'd say I'm a multi-potential artist versus I'm a therapist who also does that, people will see me differently. Hmm. And it depends in which area. Like if I'd come visit you in the States and in your dance scene, it's interesting, but I would still present myself as a therapist who does other stuff because I feel like maybe this is the remnants of my imposter syndrome. I never felt full on artist.
But isn't that also an outwardly game that we sometimes need to play for the purposes of forwarding our primary business, perhaps to say, hey, If I put this leg out, not leg, maybe this.
This leg,
this
yeah.
This hat, yeah. This hat out first. I throw this, I have three cards in my pocket.
Right.
And right now my main breadwinner is my therapist. But I'm going to throw out, I'm a multidisciplinary potential state artist. Come to my office. Perhaps for a certain person that would actually be beneficial.
Right.
But I'm just guessing here and telling what your experience of it, that sometimes we're also playing within the constraints, but it's fine to be inwardly. And it's interesting what you said about maybe perhaps not inwardly fully identifying as an artist. And I do fully see you as one.
That's so interesting.
Absolutely. Because the artistry that I saw in you is definitely connected to actually merging that trio. I saw you do a workshop in Vertigo that was a course, and I came for the last meeting, and I saw a girl playing on the piano, and perhaps not everything was impressive, but the participants were so engaged. I mean, one of them was in tears. They went through something because you put them on the stage and you allow them to play with all these things. And I thought, oh, look at this guy. Like, he is really in it. He is really in it. And wow. I thought of you as a groundbreaking artist in just going for that. The art of creating that state. Because to me, an educator is a bit stuffy, right, as a definition. So yeah, you're an educator, but you have an edge level that I saw in you, that I probably saw in myself too, that not many people have, which is a desire to walk on the edge of what is correct, possible, okay. You know, how does a therapist behave? How does a dancer behave? And you don't, from my perception of you, don't like to be in the lines or in the boxes of that. And even our performance of Loop Station Trio, three men, it was three men who are all walking on, one is a partial ballet, partial musician, everyone had a few different hats there in terms of mixing it up, music, playback, theater.
Now that you're thinking about it, as you're speaking, it really touched me because I think I grew up, it's not a coincidence that I did The Artist's Way twice, The Artist's Way at Work, because something with about artist and like, here's the core beliefs that I've inherited. So my dad never went for art, but in our family, he was the artist, the artistic one. He was the singer, he was the dancer, he was the actor. And I was always like and in all those intersections that I've mentioned where I didn't go for it all the way, I didn't go to acting school, I didn't go to dance school. So for me, I guess, out of the three, that's the identity I say least, although it's clear to me as a therapist, like I say this to clients, therapy is an art form. It's not a science. Therapy is art. It's not a science. Anyone who tells you it's a science, Freud tried to make it a science. It's not a science.
Ever get pushback from other therapists or do they mostly embrace it?
Do I ever not get pushback?
Okay.
Yeah. And I also lose a lot of clients because I don't prescribe to a certain science. I think it's an art. And I think what you said is really interesting. I say, if your definition of art, because I'm still stuck in art is dance, theater, drawing. And you're saying art is creating, is like, it's opening your mind. It's seeing the world in a different way, right? It's seeing reality.
I absolutely see it in the closer to your description of the shaman state, the ability to shift yourself and other people into states that they had previously not known, as well as open their minds to modes of thinking that they did not know existed within themselves. So a piece of art could inspire that. You know, sometimes I even like to see it in urban environments where there's a cynical idea of the landscape sometimes because the city might pay, here, the artists, put up a few statues in our cities. But right. Sometimes it gets me, you know, where I see something and I, you know, like in Jerusalem, there was the staircase that was upside down.
Right.
Somewhere in one of these neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Yeah.
As a kid, I still remember that. Upside down stairs. You know, I still remember that art can inspire that. Just something different.
So anything that opens your mind and challenges your perception of reality, that brings you into potential state, takes you a little bit out of reality.
I think that's the artistry. And it could be a drawing, a painting, a movie, or the actor, the painter, the director, or the guide, the therapist, the improvisational teacher wearing that hat, for sure.
I feel like for me, that's the hardest identity to, like, apropos imposter syndrome, like that would be the hardest. To say I'm an artist, like to look at you and say hi.
Even though it's amazing because you've been on stage so many times.
I know.
Right?
As
what? I mean, I don't know the playback world that well.
We call it a conductor.
Right. That's, right. But you're also doing these little skits that you're acting inside.
Right. So I'm an actor. I performed as an actor, a dancer, a musician. I had a band. I sang. But like, if you ask me, Asael, are you an artist? I'd be like, maybe, yes, I want to.
Right. Which, awesome. Thank you for your transparency, man. This is really interesting because it also brings me to, I do want to take another 5 minutes to start wrapping it up, but what I'm seeing as also summing up these different arenas of imposter syndrome, being the expert, specializing, and what you just shared is that specialization, I would put it on one extreme of the bank where it's represented by the outer markers of the diploma on the wall. Sometimes we need that diploma on the wall to give us permission yes. to have the internal
chutzpah,
where some shackle breaks and we yes. say, I'm yes. a fucking artist. I'm a fucking therapist.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that outer marker gives the inner permission.
It sucks. And like, it sounds like, but it's true. It is true. Right. You need it's that document. Totally yeah.
It's totally true. And this is a beautiful insight because then we can think, all right, it's pointing to the inner permission. And yeah. I'm sure there are other ways. Specialization is one. I mean, via academia or the courses that need to be taken to complete the title. And the other one, I think, is what we're bringing to light. Also, like, bring out to light the a bit of that shame and inadequacy we feel when, and from your story and your personal family story, when you don't have enough time to have two diplomas right now. Like, you would have to take another 4 years or maybe 2 years to complete the acting school, let's say. If I told you, hey, Asael, I'm giving you a scholarship, here's $1 million, so you're taken care of. I just want you to go to the most prestigious course of acting or school and complete, you know, and then what would happen, you know, after that completion? Perhaps is, yeah, I'm a fucking artist too, you know.
Right.
Maybe, or maybe not, I don't know. But it, yeah, I appreciate you just bringing up that tension because that's exactly what I would say in some ways feel with that struggle with the inner and outer play. And this talk, which I, before we started, I said, hey, let's call this Principles of Play, was to try to figure out with you some tips to unburden that, to have a more full embracing of the owl. How do we give ourselves more permission is the question.
So if I'm broadcasting live now, I'm thinking, okay, what tips would I give a budding multi-potential? Like, if you're hearing this talk and there's an itch.
What would you give yourself to empower your inner artist right now also?
Wow. First of all, this talk.
If I put you on the spotlight.
No, I think the way you see me and, you know, on one hand, it's flattering. It's also a little bit embarrassing. Do I believe you? Is he Stam saying this because he's sweet to me? But like, it's really, I'm very hard on myself. I think I'm reaching an age now at 43. Okay. I'm reaching an age now where Galit says...
I will highlight that's a beautiful thing to say, that you're hard on yourself.
Yeah. I think on one hand, my insecurities... Galit says this, my wife says it to me. Like, it's beautiful because it keeps you humble. But it's reaching a stage now in my life where it's not serving me anymore.
To be hard on yourself.
Yeah, like this mentality. Like, I grew up with my mom's voice is do another supervision, take another course. Slowly. My internalized mother, she's like, take your time.
And she was a professional licensed therapist.
I mean, the truth is she also switched professions. She wasn't a multi-potentialite, but it took her a while to find her calling. But that was her voice. And I know that every big intersection, except for the acting school, I knew that if I'd asked my parents, they would first put the brakes on. So this is what I want to say to the budding multi-potentialite, and then I will also add to myself. I think the first thing is, if you notice that you love a lot of different things, you don't have to choose. I mean, the world is forcing you to choose, and you might have to choose one gate to open, one certificate on the wall, just so you have something. Because in today's world, except for the art world, I feel it's really hard to move without anything on the wall. It's been my experience, at least in Israel. Like, you need something. People need to know.
Right. And it helps. It helps the exterior marker for the inner permission. Right. It definitely helps. And it helps outside too.
And I think we both have a mutual friend who never actually finished anything. And he's crazy talented. We both know him. And right. I feel like he's never really committed to any one of them. He's so lateral that the pyramid never peaked.
Right.
And I think that's also a tragedy, because at the end of the day, you also want to kind of integrate and bring and also see to fruition and make a living out of your passion, because that is freedom. You know, if you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. And so I just want to say this. So one, notice that. Two, find people that are similar to you. There are multi-potentialites out there. You need to seek them and find them. They'll see them at the edge. They're the mismatchers. They're wearing the funky tie. They're the ones that are sitting at the back of the room. They're the ones that are a bit blunt, a bit rude. They're the ones that people don't like. Find those people, sit at their feet, in the sense of have them. They need to create a potential state for you so you can explore and experiment and feel. And I think at the end of the day, it's really about a little bit of chutzpah, a little bit of go for it. Will that give me, am I curious about that? Can I create
chutzpah,
that?
By the way, for those who don't know, it's daring.
Like, yeah, audacity. Like
moxie, like, audacity.
Yeah, I'm going to offer myself to dance school, even though I never studied acting. And I'm also curious, I'm thinking about, was that something, now that I live in Kfar Saba, which is like a suburb city, would I have been able to do that if I wasn't living in Jerusalem, which is a kind of a cosmopolitan, where the distances are very close? I think it's also positioning. I mean, you know, in Outliers, you know, Adam Grant says nobody's really a genius. Like the Beatles had 10,000 hours. Bill Gates, his mom had a computer way before everyone. Like, you also need to position yourself in an area where you can touch these different people. And I think for me, I was blessed that I was rubbing against artists during the day, educators at the day. Like, I was rubbing up against a lot of different people. So I was constantly being enriched.
Right. So I'll say, seek out the people that can role model that for you, that can help you, that have that spark of a big hat within it doing a few things.
And even if you don't have those, force yourself to go to different areas where you'll be rubbing up against those specialists.
I love that, because that would mean, especially if we have that bubbling inadequacy, shame, even a tiny bit, would be very uncomfortable to go and reach out or step out of the comfort zone to go take a course in that thing that we love but are afraid to take.
Yeah. Because at the end of the day, if I'm only hanging out around lawyers and I dream about doing slam poetry, I'm going to start going to every single slam poetry I can, meet them, get challenged, get inspired. And I want to say one last thing. I call this to melt. Like, I have melted. I melt on a daily basis next to specialists, which is it has a negative side. But the good side is that I've always been
melting.
Melting when I'm kind of losing confidence. I'm like, oh my God, she's an amazing actress.
Like bubbling, gushing, melting.
No, melting like, I'm melting. I'm losing confidence.
Because
they're so amazing. Because when you hang with specialists, you will melt. But right. Take that melting as inspiration and not just as you're not good enough.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And the permission slip for yourself. That's our last post-it here for the day.
I want to remind myself that my artistry is not measured by the performance aspect of it, but it's the, I mean, when you said challenging people, creating a potential state is art. I know how to
artistry
take people.
Not measured by?
It's not measured by a performance or a stage. It is, I'm kind of rephrasing what you're saying. It's creating a space for people. You're creating a potential state. That is art. And if that is art, then I am an artist. And I am an artist who creates potential states.
Amen. There you go. Send you this in the mail.
Wow. Yeah. That was a hard one to birth. Yeah. I need to repeat it like times million.
We did it. Yeah. All right. Well, this was an awesome talk.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
I love that we meandered through some gardens and got to a nice bigger one.
Thank you for pushing me and helping me find something that's new for me as well.
Hey, my pleasure. You've done it for me before.
And I want to say one last thing. Like, no one's ever wanted to talk to me specifically about the multi-potentialite dimension of my life. Can I just finish with a quote, with your permission? This comes from a book called One Person, Multiple Career, The Original Guide to the Slash Career by Marcy Alberhurt. Last page, she says, still, in the end, I believe we are all slashers by necessity. After all, who can answer the question, what do you do, with a single response? And why would we want to? So I think multipotentialites, it's out of necessity. It's not a choice. You just find yourself that you want that.
Yes. Embrace it. Embrace your owl.
Embrace the owl. Go find other multipotentialites. One of them is Tal Shibi. The other one is me.
Yes. So speaking of finding them, we'll use Dr. Romanelli, Dr. Asael Romanelli, the potential state. It's thepotentialstate.com. Is that
just
your website?
Just potentialstate.com. It has everything there, yeah.
And also a really interesting YouTube channel.
Oh, yes. Can I say a word about that?
I've been getting some good tips from that.
So after I handed in my PhD, I hit 40. I had my midlife crisis. Then I shifted into actually generating content. So I have a YouTube channel with over 120 videos. We have a podcast with the same content. And there's a blog on Psychology Today. All these resources are free. They're in the website, potentialstate.com. Sign up for our newsletter. Come.
I'm already there.
And I also want to give a shout out to your Tal Shibi has a YouTube channel now. Subscribe, like, follow.
Sure. Thank you. I'm just learning how to get people to get interested. So thank you.
All right. My pleasure.
All right.
All right, so people.
Nelly.
We're going to stop now.
So that was my talk with Tal Shibi. I'll leave all his info in the details below so you can check it out and follow him as well. I hope this was meaningful for you as much as it was for me. And I'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Potential State podcast. For more information, visit us at potentialstate.com. Thanks for listening.